Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Charlotte Tuggle, filling in this week for Stan Jastrzebski. This week, Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski is our guest. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, Charlotte. Thank you for having me.
If you have any questions for the Lafayette Mayor, you can call them in at 765-496-1999. You can also send us an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. All right, so I'd like to start out by something that happened earlier this month. It was Mental Health Awareness Week. Can you kind of tell me how that went, where the inspiration came from to dedicate a whole week this month?
Well, I mean, it's something that we try to do on a continuing basis. You know, in our community, state of Indiana, and really across the country, there is a lack of access to mental health services for lots of reasons. But the bottom line is we need to continue to bring attention to the need for additional mental health services, the need for additional addiction services, and to help people that are looking for those services and need no support, knowing that their local community, and that's why we do the proclamation on a local level, is behind them and we are supporting them. We know almost everybody knows someone, or almost every family is affected in some way by a mental health issue at some point. And we want to make sure that people know of the services that we have, know that there are people to support them, and know that the community is continuing to work on the issue. In fact, you probably saw in the paper today, there was an article about a unit that Franciscan Health is getting ready to open up. And there are other initiatives underway with North Central Health Services. United Way is looking at this issue on how do we, you know, bring in more clinicians? How do we bring in more people to help provide those services? How do we make sure people are getting the help that they can? And so we did the proclamation. NAMI had the walk. Again, that was to help raise money, but also to get the word out. And the other big piece that we look at that is we really want to educate people as to, you know, what mental illness is, what good mental health is, and that we want to get rid of that stigma that's been associated with that for way, way too long. And, you know, we've made a lot of progress as a country. We've made a lot of progress on removing that, but it's still there, and we need to continue to work on that so people feel comfortable when they need to reach out for help, when they're looking for services, that they feel comfortable telling somebody, whether it's a friend, family member, or their employer, that employers do a better job of helping recognize mental health issues and helping get people into treatment. And then we've got to make sure that we have that treatment available. And so it's important on a lot of different levels. You know, it's about awareness and education more than anything.
So from what you've heard around other communities, are we about on par in terms of the amount of resources we have for mental health? Or is there any kind of one area that you're really looking at trying to work on?
Well, I mean, again, across the country, most places are like here, that there is not enough mental health services. People wait way too long to get back in to see a counselor, a psychologist, or a psychiatrist. To get that first visit sometimes can take months and months. Outpatient, inpatient, both, we can use more. And most places are like that. And then, of course, with the opioid crisis, we know that the availability of addiction services also needs to be increased because of that situation. And so, of course, we're working on that here. We're going to have a medicated-assisted facility that will open in 2018. Again, North Central Health Services is working on this issue. So there are a lot of community resources that are pulling together to address it, but it's going to have to be addressed on a national level. I saw some statistics a while back that just the number of young people that are going into the fields of psychology and psychiatry and those fields, you know, those that we need to be able to help those folks, those numbers continue to shrink. And so it's also, how do we increase that feeder system of people that actually want to help provide those services? So it's a big issue. It's one I'm proud of what we're doing here locally and how the community really has rallied around it and trying to make a concerted effort to change that.
And on the other side of that, when you are implementing, you know, these services and everything, is it also a struggle to kind of educate people about them and actually draw them in? And do you think that the stigma that you're trying to break down has, you know, a factor into that decision?
You know, I think 20 years ago, there was a lot of that. Most people did not want to talk about mental health issues, mental illness, either for themselves or within their family, or if it existed, people tried to hide that. And, you know, over the years, the education process, I believe, has made things much better. Does some of that still exist? Absolutely. But I think it has diminished a great deal. You know, I served on the board of the Mental Health Association here in the community back in the 90s for many, many years. And, I can tell you from being directly involved with that at the time, things are better now. They're not exactly where we would all like to see them yet. We've got a long way to go. But they are definitely better, and they are improving. And the work that the outreach work that's being done, the education work that's being done, really is making a difference.
What do you see as the next definitive step on that way to making sure that there, you know, is little to no stigma left in Lafayette?
Well, I mean, we just have to keep doing the programs that we have, those walks, those proclamations, and I mean, those things are just little steps, but they're important steps on helping to get that word out. And as we, you know, teach our young children, as we teach people that we interact with, each one of us can play a role in making a difference, whether it's helping somebody get into mental health counseling, whether it's helping somebody get addiction services, or some kind of other help that they need, really, one-on-one, face-to-face. You know, if all of us do a little, we can make a big difference. And so it's incumbent upon all of us to say, you know what, I'm going to be part of the solution. And I'm not going to be just thinking in my mind, boy, I don't feel that way and I hope others don't. I'm going to try to do one little part, maybe change one person's mind, maybe get one person into services. If each of us would just do that, it'd make a huge difference.
All right. And if you have a question for Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, be sure to call 765-496-1999. You can also send it in an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. Now, I'd like to switch gears just a little bit here. The Lafayette Police Department sent out a release today about the ongoing drug task force initiative that's going on this week. There have been 7 arrests of narcotics dealers in less than a week right now. What does that kind of tell you about the kind of investigation going on right now into, you know, stopping the supply of mm-hmm. drugs? I know this has been a big issue.
Right. Well, you know, in all reality, we'll back up just a little bit. You know, we have 2 units that work very, very diligently on helping to try to stop the flow of illegal narcotics into our community, and that's our street crimes unit and then our drug task force. Now, the investigations and the information you saw today, quite honestly, probably are a result of investigations that could easily have been going on for a year. Drug investigations take an incredible amount of time. As you begin to build relationships, as you begin to use people as informants and through undercover operations, as you gather information, as you do enough buys to make sure that you can, those cases will hold up in court and be successfully prosecuted. You know, drug investigations take a long time. I know sometimes people will call in about a drug problem and we'll start working on it. And it can be a little bit frustrating when it seems how long it might be taking, but literally they can take months, they can take years. And sometimes also what's happening is they are trying through the investigative methods that they use to build additional relationships with informants, with people in the community that actually begin to tie people to that drug trade, to that trafficking operation, to the distribution operation. You know, so kind of from the supplier all the way down to the end user, there's a lot of steps there and there's a lot of ground to be covered. And so to do those investigations thoroughly, to gather that intelligence, to look at that data, then to analyze that data, look for patterns, look for other people's involved, see what connections they might actually have to other crimes that have been committed in the community or other people that are involved in criminal activity. Again, you know, drawing those connection points, gathering that data, not to conclude your investigation too soon and maybe miss another opportunity. And so they do a great job. It is not easy. It is dangerous. And you're literally dealing with people from around the world. Sometimes we work with different federal agencies. We work together with the other law enforcement agencies here in our community, sharing information, sharing resources, helping each other build those cases. But it is very time consuming. So the arrests that you see today are probably the result of a lot of hard work. Now, every once in a while, do you get lucky and pull that car over and the dog sniffs out, you know, several pounds of cocaine or, you know, heroin or methamphetamines or something, large amounts of cash? Absolutely. But most of it is just good old-fashioned, down-to-earth police work, nose to the ground, boots on the ground, out there every day trying to gather that information, make that buy, draw that connection, get citizen input. You know, we stress that continually, that a lot of these arrests do start with citizens calling us in, calling into us and giving us information about they've seen a lot of cars at one particular house. Some people even get license plates. They've seen certain people in and out, and they continue to help us. But a lot of those investigations initiate from citizen input, and that's why you see it at the bottom of a lot of those press releases. We talk about and thank the community for their support and calling in these tips. And, you know, maybe that tip started right here, but boy, the people we arrested ended up being way up the food chain, and that's always a good win for the community and a good win for the police department. So, again, we want to thank all the citizens of Lafayette, West Lafayette, and Tippecanoe County that support our police officers, call in information, are vigilant in their neighborhoods. We want to encourage them to use the Nextdoor platform that the police department uses to get out lots and lots of information, but also to share what they're seeing with other people in their neighborhood so that whole neighborhood becomes vigilant. We're somewhere getting close to 30% of all households in Lafayette are on that Nextdoor platform. That's really good. So it means, you know, a little bit more than one out of every four houses on a street or is involved in some way. You know, our goal is to continue to make that number rise, because the more eyes and ears that we have of citizens helping us, the better and safer our community is going to be. We have about 142 sworn policemen that do a lot of different things, but we've got 70,000 citizens, right? We have lots of eyes and ears out there, and there are many, many people that are deeply committed to their neighborhood, to this community, that are willing to help, and they really make a difference, and I want to personally thank them for all they do in helping make Lafayette the great place that it is.
And in combating kind of the flow of drugs into the community, is there any sure way to measure how effective all these efforts are?
Well, I mean, I think you can look at the number of arrests you make, but that's not always a good indicator or a metric if you're actually being effective. You can look at the quantity of the drugs that you take off the street, or sometimes other weapons. You can also look at how many other crimes were solved, and sometimes we solve other crimes because of drug investigations, burglaries, robberies, and things of that nature. So, you know, you can look at all that data. Now, can you take that and actually quantify that based on what are actually worldwide distribution networks that come into this community from either Indianapolis, Chicago, Fort Wayne, come up from the south, come from the west? I mean, you know, that's pretty hard to do, but I think what the overarching theme for this really is there is not a magic wand or a silver bullet that solves all this problem. We've talked about this from forever. You know, we need to be doing everything like we are in United Way, through the United Way agency, of helping people. We need to fund pre-K education. We need to properly fund our schools. We need to make sure we have job training programs. We need citizens to participate. We need access to mental health facilities, and we need access to drug addiction. Then we need law enforcement to do everything they can to get to those dealers, to get to those distributors, to help stop that flow. I mean, it has to be literally a global response to this whole situation. But I think people have recognized that, particularly the opioid crisis has touched so many people's lives in ways that people never imagined was possible, because some people get started through the overuse of pain medication that they got for very legitimate reasons. Other people get started just because they want to experiment. And there are a multitude of reasons that lead to that. But it has touched so many people's lives in so many devastating ways. It really has got national attention. And there's a lot of things being done. It took a lot of years to get in this situation. It's going to take several years to get out. And even the medical community have bought in that, you know, the United States prescribes more pain medication than like the other 8 or 9 countries combined or something. It's just incredible. And so it's going to take us looking at that. The pharmacies are on board. And that's what it's take. It's going to take a multifaceted response to a huge issue, and it's going to take dedication and will and strength to continue to do it. You can't give up. You can't stop. I mean, it's not going to go away on its own. And even after we get it under control, we have to look at some of the, continue to look at some of those underlying factors that led to the crisis, whether it be social factors, whether it be the way we do medicine, and we have to continue to make sure that we're monitoring those.
Right. So there has been a lot of talk about the prescriptions side of the crisis. There's also, the prevalence of street drugs. Do you think that maybe that presence is an unintended consequence when a city is moving forward, becoming more urbanized? Is there always going to be kind of that risk that comes with it being a more populous city?
Well, I mean, when you look back, you know, the war on drugs, as they like to call it, has been going on for decades and decades through generations and generations. And I think we have seen drugs created, illegal drugs created, and then more powerful drugs created properly through medicine that we never dreamed even 10 years ago were going to be possible. And so, unfortunately, any time that you have access to those types of narcotics that actually change brain chemistry and create, you know, at least for some folks, a short-term feeling of euphoria, your problems go away, you feel better at least short-term. I mean, there is always going to be the risk that people are going to take part in that activity. And I don't know that there is a way to ever totally eliminate that. Like, you know, some folks drink alcohol and they drink it very responsibly. Some people struggle with drinking alcohol responsibly. We're all different, and then part of that's chemistry also. But I think there are things that you can do. I mean, I think, but a lot of that is honestly getting down the food chain. It's, like I said, pre-K education, getting kids start right. It's things like we're doing with the North End Community Center, where we're going to partner with Big Brothers and Big Sisters, the Hannah Center, the Senior Center, Meals on Wheels, collaborations that bring people together, that give people opportunity, that give people hope, so they don't need to turn to something to fill a gap in their life. Well, the work we've done with the Faith CDC on the Hartford Hub and the kids that are getting opportunities to be helped with their homework, meeting kids that go to Purdue University. You know, I've used this story several times as we talked about these projects. I was down there several months ago, and I walked in, and a little boy was standing there, and he walked up to me, and he said, "Hey, aren't you the mayor?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." And I saw in the background, Purdue students were there, and they had their Purdue shirts on, and they had been there talking about things at Purdue and helping them with homework, and I picked him up. And, you know, this is one of the most rewarding things that ever happened to me as being the mayor. And I held that little boy in front of me and kind of looking into his eyes, and he was looking into mine, and he just said, "You know what? I'm going to be a scientist." And, you know, that was one of the best moments I've ever had, because I said, you know what? We're actually making a difference. We're creating new ideas, new hope for these young people that they just simply would not have had without this facility. So I think when you look at things like that, and like I said, the new Y, the North End Community Center, the work that Big Brothers and Big Sisters does, and Hannah and some of the other organizations we have, and what the Y is going to do with child care to help people stay in Ivy Tech, what they're going to do through Junior Achievement with Finance Park and BizTown and help give kids a training, that's the real key to eliminating the, you know, if there's nobody to use the drugs, there's no market. So I'm a realist. We're not going to get to every person, but I do think there are ways that we can put processes in place, opportunity in place, hope in place, that will reduce the number of people that choose to take that path. And then if we're tough on the law enforcement side, and we have lots of good services for those that have made that mistake and want to get help, and Lord knows we want to help those people. If they want help, we want to get that mental health service. We want to get them back living happy, productive lives. We want to get those addiction services and get them off those drugs and get them back living happy, productive lives, being citizens of the community. And you just got to keep juggling all those moving pieces to accomplish that. And I feel good about we're doing many, many, many of those things in our community right now.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. If you have a question, be sure to dial it in at 765-496-1999. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet us at WBAA News. So I'm going to shift gears again. There was a recent post on the Lafayette Facebook page. Someone was saying that one thing they want to see more in Lafayette is attractions, something like, you know, they said an aquarium instead of more stores and restaurants. So how do you kind of strike a balance between how you want Lafayette to look when, you know, we get rid of all the orange barrels and everything? What do you want people to see?
You just had to throw that in. You've just been waiting to do that, haven't you? I wish you guys could see the smile on our face right now. So, well, I mean, I understand that. Now, restaurants and retail actually are important to a community. We don't actually recruit restaurants. The restaurants that come to our community come to the community because their marketing analysis has said Lafayette's growing, it's prosperous, we have lots of jobs. You know, Caterpillar, SIA, Kirby Risk, Oscar Winsky, the new GE Corporation, Nonshan. And because we're growing, they see that opportunity. And so we don't really go recruit restaurants. They come, and as do most of the stores. You know, amenities like an aquarium, you know, I understand that. That's a matter of being able to do that financially. I mean, we have a zoo here, not a big zoo, but we have some great parks, 700 acres of parks and trails and an aquatic center, swimming pools. And our zoo is free, which is not easy to do, even in a community this size. You know, when you're talking about operating an aquarium or a zoo the size of the Indianapolis Zoo, and you look at Lafayette, West Lafayette, you look at all of Tippecanoe County, we're 188,000 people. And you look at the counties that surround us that are pretty rural once you get into Benton, Carroll, Clinton, those counties. You know, you have to ask yourself, can you build something of that magnitude, charge a price that people can afford, and still be able to operate it and maintain it? It's financially challenging. Now, we would like to do, you know, some additional things along the riverfront as we develop that. We're hoping that will spur some new amenities for the community, and we have some in those designs. But, you know, if you look around the country, there really aren't very many aquariums, and most of the aquariums, Chicago's big enough to house a great big one. There aren't many places that can support. I'll just give you an example. We're trying to build some new exhibits at the zoo. We want to expand the zoo, so we want to build a primate exhibit for the monkeys. We still want to build the large cat exhibit, and we're working right now on building a penguin exhibit because that's something people want. That's a pretty cool exhibit, especially for a city our size. That penguin exhibit alone, to build the exhibit, build all the mechanicals that have to go into it, and then all the requirements for having penguins, not operational costs, just to build the exhibit itself is going to be about $1.6 million to build one exhibit. So you can imagine, you know, building an aquarium, depending on the size, could be $100 million easy to build an aquarium. So, you know, we'll continue to look at those things, but we also have to make sure that we don't put ourselves in a financial situation that we get in over our head and we can't provide the other services.
Right. And Lafayette and West Lafayette right now both working on a lot of development, quality of life projects. How important is it to your city, especially, to get people from the other side of the bridge to come and visit?
Well, you know, we work on that a lot, and I think Mayor Dennis and myself work together very well, and we're definitely trying to bridge that gap. There's play on words. So, but we feel with what we're doing with the riverfront development, what he's doing with State Street, the growth that we've had in downtown, that is starting to happen on a much larger basis. You know, when the new freshman students come into Purdue now, one of the days of the Boiler Bridge Bash they have in downtown Lafayette. Mayor Dennis and myself worked with the new athletic director, Mike Babinski, a while back, and he actually had us come over. It was the first time it's ever happened, and John and I addressed the whole athletic department about what was going on in Lafayette, what was going on in West Lafayette, what we're both trying to do, how can they help us, how can we help them, and we really appreciate that outreach. And we've talked about that. And if you look at our trail systems, if you look at our parks, if you look at the amenities, and part of that, we need to do a better job about what is taking place at the Long Center, Civic Theater, the Lafayette Theater, like I said, the parks, the trails we have, the zoo, the water parks, everything in West Lafayette at Elliott Hall and over here at the small theaters. There's actually a lot going on in the community. And we've talked about this, you know, our long-term goal with the riverfront development between Lafayette and West Lafayette and another bridge that will actually go in at Brown Street is where our master plans show us working to create what would be viewed by people as one large metropolitan downtown. So you would be going back and forth by bridges and by trails connecting Lafayette and West Lafayette with amenities that would make you think you were in a much larger city or a much larger downtown by joining those two through our strategic planning. And we think that's really important as we look at keeping and retaining talent here in the community, attracting new jobs, developing our workforce, quality of life initiatives, and create an atmosphere to maybe have some of those larger amenities that there's a large enough population base in a concentrated area that we could support that. And so, you know, that's underway right now, and that's going to continue to happen well into the future.
So are these projects more about attracting people to the area or keeping them once they're here?
Well, they're both. To survive in a global economy, you know, we fight for every economic development project that we get in Lafayette, West Lafayette, or Purdue gets. We're competing with the world. You're not just competing with the city down the street anymore. And so to develop your workforce, develop what you need for the future, you have to keep and retain. We like to keep and retain more of the folks that graduate from Purdue each year, but we also need people to move in. And then we need people that when they leave high school, maybe they go to a college in some other town, they don't go to Purdue or some other state, we need to make sure they're coming back. So again, we don't have the luxury of kind of just saying it's for one particular reason. You have to be doing all of that type of retention and attraction if we're going to remain competitive. You know, between Purdue University and West Lafayette, what they do from Discovery Park to the Research Park to nanotechnology to the agri-sciences, all the great things that are happening over there is just really fuel for the local economy. And then you look on Lafayette, over $1 billion of new expansion in the last few years at Subaru. You look at Caterpillar, you look at Toyota Tsusho, the new GE Jet Aviation facility. I think they have $19 billion in back orders for those engines. You look at Nonshan, Heartland Automotive, Arconic, Wabash National, Kirby Risk. I mean, we have a very, very strong advanced manufacturing base. And that's a powerful combination of West Lafayette, Lafayette, and Tippecanoe County. And so we need to attract people. We need to keep people. We need to help our local businesses grow and expand and ensure that we have those quality of life amenities that people want.
All right. We've got about a minute left. So very briefly, can you tell us how you felt your testimony about short-term rentals went at the State House Study Committee?
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, I felt it went well. You know, I went down. Senator Messmer had asked me to come down. He's the chairman of the committee. He had looked at our ordinance here in Lafayette, and he felt that we had done a very good job here in Tippecanoe County, striking a balance between allowing Airbnbs to continue but also to protect our R1 neighborhoods. You know, some of those folks living in those neighborhoods, their houses are their life savings. And so I went down and testified before the committee. A little bit of background on how we got to the point of developing that ordinance. I went through the ordinance itself then, kind of each section. I think it was well received. The lady from Airbnb congratulated me when it was over with and said she'd like to work with me. So I think that's a good sign.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mayor Rozworski. That's all our time for today. Next week, we'll have Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Remember to send your questions and have a great rest of the day.
Membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.